I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 20. My name is John Morgan. I appreciate you being here. Today, I'm coming to you from someplace not too terribly exciting, to be honest with you. I know that we like to travel the world and take you with us and check in from all over the globe. But tonight, I'm just sitting in my office at home, to be honest with you. Not really exciting. Sorry to disappoint you there. But lots going on in the world of MMA, of course. My wife had plans for the night. So I am on babysitting duty, and I waited until the little man, the 3-year-old Eli, was in bed before I started to record this. But just to let you know, he's liable to walk in here at any moment because for whatever reason, he's not staying in bed very often. He likes to get up and wander around. So we may get a guest appearance from a half sleeping MMA junkie Eli very soon, but we'll deal with that when it happens. Listen, first of all, let me just say thank you to everybody that's listening right now. I really do appreciate it. My man Cold Coffee will be editing everything together once I send this in to him. I wish he could be here, but obviously he didn't want to come over late at night and wait for my kid to go to bed before he could record the podcast after we had a long day at the Nevada State Athletic Commission hearing this morning, and we'll talk about all that in just a second. Just to get all the particulars out of the way, first, obviously you can follow me at MMA Junkie John, and of course the show itself at the MMA Roadshow, both Twitter and Instagram. We try to do our best to take pictures as we travel around the globe and take you into our adventures, so when you're listening to this podcast, you can know a little bit about what we're talking about. And you can follow Cold Coffee, my man, at the Cold Coffee, that is T-H-E-E. The Cold Coffee. Follow him there. And, of course, listen, you can download the show, as you know, at the www.themmaroadshow.com, or you can subscribe to it on iTunes. And if you do that, subscribe up, give us a review, do all that good stuff. I like reading the reviews even when people hate on us. So let's talk about the Anderson Silva hearing today, first and foremost. Actually home this week. This is a rare off week for all major MMA promotions. No UFC, no World Series of Fighting, no Bellator. So the MMA world is kind of taking a deep breath and taking a little bit of rest, but not everybody in it is. And, of course, Anderson Silva today, his hearing was at the Grant Sawyer State Office Building here in Las Vegas. And, man, you know, it's been a couple of hours since it went down, and I just got to say, I thought it was a sad display, man. I don't think I'm alone in saying that. It was very disappointing to see. Of course, Anderson Silva, still in my mind, the greatest fighter of all time. So to see him, number one, fail a test sucks. And I think it says a lot about the era of the past couple of years. And hopefully things are going to get cleaned up with the new, more stringent drug testing. USADA looking over the UFC's drug testing plan now. Hopefully things are going to get better. But, of course, this is a kind of a sad statement on things. But more so than that, it was just the way the whole situation was handled. And as a fighter, man, I have all the respect in the world for Anderson Silva. But I've been shocked all along, and I've been saying it frequently, and I'll say it one last time, and then we'll just, you know, close the book on it and move past. But I think Anderson made a huge mistake. I think the right play here was just to come in after his failed drug test and just say, listen, I messed up. I took this substance. You know, I was 39 years old at the time. I was recovering from a broken leg, and I needed to take these steroids to help me feel better about my recovery, about my opportunities, about what I had left in my career. And I think had he done that, you know, he's a first-time offender. I think he would have gotten 9 months instead of the 1 year that he was given instead. And I think people would have moved quickly past it, to be honest with you. I mean, who doesn't understand the mental challenges that Anderson Silva is going through now? You know, after that horrific broken leg that he had against Chris Weidman, to come back against all odds, to be honest with you. And I think a lot of people thought, you know, that would be it. At this late in his career, why does he even need to come back? You know, he's made a ton of money in his career, certainly accomplished everything that he's going to accomplish. You know, why even bother to come back? And obviously his drive and determination was so great that he felt he needed to fight again. And while I certainly don't condone cheating in any fashion, I do think it's something that people could have understood. And I think had he just apologized and said, look, here's what happened, man, I just really do believe people would have moved past it. I feel like, especially in the United States, and, you know, I feel like we're a type of society that just forgives people. And if when people ask for it, we are willing to move past it and willing to say, okay, we get it, we understand. And I think it's a shame that that wasn't what was done here. Instead, there was an argument about potentially tainted supplements, also taking a sexual enhancement drug that came from a blue vial that was given to him that originated in Thailand. And man, there's just not an excuse for that. Even if that's what happened. I mean, even if that's what happened. And I'm sorry, I don't believe that's what happened. I don't believe that substance is what forced Anderson Silva to test positive. I'm sorry. I just don't. But even if it was, man, you're a professional athlete. You know you're going to be drug tested, and you're going to take a substance from an unlabeled bottle that was given to you by a friend. Come on, man. Come on. You got to know better than that. So the whole thing was really just kind of sad to see it all play out. 2 hours of testimony that really did absolutely nothing to help Anderson whatsoever. His attorney, the expert witness that were brought in, I don't think they did anything to help his case at all. And I don't think anybody, as that 2 hours was unfolding, was thinking, yeah, man, I really get it. I understand where he's coming from. Yeah, this should change. No. It did nothing like that. And it's just really disappointing, man. It's a disappointing moment in the sport, and I don't think there's any other way to look at it. And, you know, Anderson will be back. Sounds like he still wants to fight on. He can apply again in February. He has to provide a clean sample. I'm sure he'll be able to do that in February. And he can fight again. Maybe he'll be on the Super Bowl card. Certainly a possibility. So just kind of rough. There were some comedic moments. If you didn't get a chance to see the entire hearing, and certainly that would be understandable. It did stream on UFC Fight Pass, but these commission meetings are not always the most exciting. But we did have a little prankster, a little joker, that got on the line. There is a dial-in number that is provided for media and for anybody, really, that wants to listen in. You can call in and listen to these things live. The problem is there's not a real super complicated or super secure system of managing the phone calls that are coming in. And so the lines were open, and somebody was able to get a couple of songs in there. Somebody was playing DJ. Got a couple of sexually related songs, some R. Kelly, a little Two Live Crew. But the funniest moment was the first one, which was as Anderson Silva was outlining kind of why he was taking these sexual enhancement pills, a little Salt and Pepper came on. Let's Talk About Sex. And it was at a moment that was very quiet in the room, and it emanated from the speakerphone system that is there. And I got to say, it was pretty damn funny. And if you didn't get a chance to see it, Cole Coffey was shooting the entire proceedings and had about an 18-second, you know, clip on Facebook. So check out the MMA Junkie Facebook page, and you can see it. And the heading, of course, is that makes all the sense in the world. How much of a train wreck was today's commission hearing with Anderson the Spider Silva? This probably wasn't even the weirdest part. And then you can see the video unfold there. And if you, you know, Ed Soros, who of course is the longtime manager and friend and translator of Anderson Silva, even he had to crack up a little bit. It was just so bizarre and awkward that it was actually funny. So worth checking that out. Anderson Silva did get a 1-year suspension. Of course, that dates back to the date of the fight, which was late January, UFC 183. So, you know, he'll be back February of 2016, it looks like. I will say this, again, not to beat a dead horse, but I think had he just come in and apologized, and you know, again, this is August, for an incident that happened in January. He's been putting off his assignment over and over and over to get alleged research, and this was the research that showed up. My gosh, I mean, just not good. I just honestly feel like had he gone in there back in February, back in March, you know, and just apologized to the court, they would have given him 9 months as a first-time offender, and that would have been that. And, you know, there were two boxers at today's hearing. They each got seven-month sentences. They both got seven-month suspensions. Neither one of them tried to make any kind of a case. It was more just coming in and saying, ah, my bad. Yep, you got me. Sorry, shouldn't have done it. And they got 7 months. And Anderson Silva got a year. And I don't blame the commission for that. The commission has to set some kind of precedent, you know, encourage people to do things the right way and to be a little bit more forthcoming. And you can imagine how frustrating it is for them when everybody just comes in and says, oh, I didn't do anything. Must have been a tainted supplement. You know, they're not idiots. They've been around. And they know it's not tainted supplements. So, you know, for these boxers to come in and just say, ah, you know, made a mistake. Didn't do what I was supposed to do and get 7 months. And then Anderson to assumingly pay his attorney and this expert witness a lot of money and to get a year. Ah, man, it's just disappointing to see. And I will say that I do think the commission sometimes handles the punishment between boxers and mixed martial artists a little bit differently. And I hope that over time they will see the error in their ways as they start to correct, because they are also signing up for these more stringent sentences. The SAC is going to be handing out these, you know, two-year suspensions instead of 1 year. So Anderson did get a little bit lucky in the fact that he got grandfathered in on those old ones. But hopefully as they put in these more stringent disciplines, they'll stick to it, whether it's a boxer or a mixed martial artist. So that was the commission hearing live on UFC Fight Pass. Myself and Cole Coffee were there live, of course, watching it in person. Not always the most exciting things, of course, but some important business does happen there. So good to tune into every now and then and just see how it works. You know, if nothing else, you know how it works and you can see how it unfolds. So I guess the the other fun note was the translator that served for the Attorney General's office that was the subject of much adoration. I saw a lot of people that were very complimentary, we'll say, in the beauty of this young lady. She, of course, is Mike Mersch's wife, a Brazilian young lady that he met. I always saw him hanging out in Brazil, of course, a place I make it to quite frequently. I saw him hanging out with her down there, so I'm assuming that's where they met on one of his trips down to Brazil. And eventually they, of course, married and had a baby not too long ago. So Mike Mersch, who used to be with the UFC, is now back with the Attorney General's office. But that was actually his wife that was serving as the much-adored translator today, although she did come under some fire, and Ed Soros wasn't exactly happy with her translation at one point, and he actually was sworn in and started doing some translating, which I'm a big fan of Ed. I consider him a friend, and I know he had the right intentions in mind. I don't know that having somebody's manager as their interpreter is probably always the best thing to do in a legal-type setting. But I do believe Ed came in there with all the best intentions and certainly wasn't trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. So I'm happy to put this day behind us. You know, Thursday, August the 13th, as we sit and record. Certainly won't forget this time, but happy to put it behind us to get this all done with Anderson Silva. A lot of jokes were cracked today, of course. Anybody that can imagine sitting on a live internet stream and talking about your need to take sexual enhancement pills, certainly not a lot of fun, especially when you're widely regarded as the greatest fighter of all time. But Anderson took his lumps, took his hefty fine as well, and suspended for 1 year. So, man, hopefully we'll see him back. And it'll be interesting to see what he has left and what he does with this time. I mean, because he did put it off for so long, you know, he did already essentially serve a lot of his sentence already. Without you know, really being active, he just kind of kept putting things off. Now, you know, knowing that you're suspended, know you can't book a fight. Will he train? You know, will he continue to work hard in the gym and get himself ready for a comeback? I sure hope so. You know, I don't know what he's got left for the top of the people, that division. But I think there's certainly a couple fights that make sense. It may sound weird, but Michael Bisping fight. I know it's a fight that Michael Bisping has always wanted. And I think a fight that he's, you know, once said he would hate to have to tell his grandkids one day, you know, that his career was overlapped Anderson Silva so much in the UFC and so much in the same division, but he never got a chance to fight him. So, you know, I certainly would love to see that fight come together. And, you know, I don't know that Anderson has anything for certainly Chris Weidman. That's already been demonstrated, but, Luke Rockhold, Jacare, Yoel Romero, you know, I don't know if we need to see Anderson Silva against any of those guys, but certainly still seeing Anderson Silva fight would be fun. So hopefully we can put this behind and we can forget about this day and forget about this bizarre hearing and move forward. So with that in the books, I wanted to bring to you an interview that I did earlier in the week with Michael Johnson. You'll remember, of course, Michael Johnson fought this past week in Nashville, Tennessee, was what I thought the recipient of a horrible decision. And I don't mean that as any disrespect to Beneil Dariush. He put on a great fight and it looked very good. And I think won the third round. A lot of people said it was 30-27 Michael Johnson. I did have it 29-28. I did think that Beneil Dariush did enough to win that third and final round. But I did not think he did enough to win the first two rounds. Fortunately for Michael Johnson, two of the judges did, and he was awarded the win. So, Beneil Dariush, I should say, was awarded the win. So, I wanted to catch up with Michael Johnson because I didn't get a chance to talk to him out there in Nashville as I didn't travel to that show. And I wanted to talk to him about the decision because I thought it was bad. And, man, it's just so critical. And we talk about it a little bit. You know, it's easy. It was just a week ago. And I think we've all moved past it. So much has already happened. You know, there's been more Ronda Rousey news. And, of course, there's been all this Anderson Silva stuff. And, you know, there's just things that take our attention away from what happened. There's so many fight cards. There's so much happening that we forget about stuff very quickly. But, you know, this is the type of loss that Michael Johnson was getting to contendership and really getting himself into some fights that matter and some big money fights and some big opportunities. And all that's pretty much gone. So, you know, how the organization will treat it, we'll have to see. You'll hear in the interview, Michael didn't get the, hey, bro, don't worry, we got you treatment. So, you know, will they give it to him anyway? I don't know. We'll see. You know, will he get matched up like he won the fight? I think he should. But we'll find out. So, as I make sure that my son is still tucked in tightly in bed, I will say I do have a frosty beverage in front of me. I didn't break all traditions as I wanted to have a nice cold cocktail to talk about MMA this evening and to take the edge off that Anderson Silva hearing, man, just to forget about that. So as I check on the little man and maybe re-up on my frosty beverage, sit back, relax, and listen to the menace. Michael Johnson talk about the interesting decision that he was on the short end of in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Michael, what's going on, man?
Hey, doing good. Sorry about the late start here. I really had a long morning.
No worries, man. No worries. Just glad I could get a hold of you, man. Having a little free time or training already, or what was keeping you busy?
I just got back in St. Louis. We drove back. We didn't get in town till late last night, so I was kind of sleeping and, you know, I'm a little tired still, but I'm up and at it now.
No worries, man. So is this still a good time for you then?
Yeah, it's a good time.
Awesome, man. Well, listen, I wanted to catch up with you. Obviously, I didn't get a chance to travel out to Nashville and see your fight, but I definitely wanted to talk to you, man, after what was just, to be honest, I thought a ridiculous decision. So you've had a little bit of time to let it sink in. How are you feeling about it right now, man, after you've had a little chance to process it?
I think it's making me more upset the more I got time to think about it. you know, I really need another fight, like, set book ASAP, and something needs to get done about this fight. You know, it was my fault. I left it in the hand of the hands of the judges, absolutely, you know, but at the same time, I feel like I went in there and I fought hard for three rounds, and I was winning. You know, I even watched the fight back, and I even feel like I probably would have gave myself the third round as well. He didn't do much damage. I was still chasing him and controlling him and trying to fight, and he didn't engage at all after he got dropped in the first round. So I don't see how I lose that fight, especially defending eight of his takedowns and not taking much damage at all.
Yeah, I agree. How many times have you watched the fight back?
I've only watched it once. I might watch it one more time, and then after that, never watch it again.
Just too frustrating to relive it?
Yeah, it's really frustrating. Like, the first time I watched it, I was like, what? You know, I'm just thinking, like, how is he getting this decision win? Like, he hasn't done anything to me. And, like, throughout the whole fight, I'm like, I haven't been hit hard once. I mean, he caught me with one hard punch, and he caught me with a good knee. And that was pretty much his, like, all his, like, good points of the fight, I think. And he did have a good jab working, but, you know, I was trying to, hopefully he would engage a little bit more off of his jab, but didn't, I guess. He was perfectly fine with jabbing and running away.
Yeah, man. You know, you said it, you said, hey, don't leave it in the hands of the judges, and that's something we say all the time in mixed martial arts. You know, Dana says it, reporters say it, you know, fighters say it. I don't want you to bash on the judges or anything like that, but, I mean, don't you think we're getting to a point where we shouldn't have to say that? I mean, yes, finishing a fight is the way to go, but I don't know. I feel like as the sport grows and everybody's getting more professional, don't you think it should come to a point where we say, well, we can leave it in the hands of the judges because these guys know what they're watching?
Yeah, exactly. We should be able to depend on the judges to have the knowledge and have the common sense to see all that to fight. Oh, I can absolutely see that he dominated and he won. You know, we should feel like that's a safe place. If we're not going to go in there and be the type of fighter that just leaves himself out there to dry, to go run and try to get a finish just because he's worried about what the judges are going to think and put himself at risk and danger. You know, I consider myself a pretty smart fighter, and I'm never going to put myself out there to dry or put myself in a bad decision based on if I think the judges need to see a little bit more, if the fans aren't happy or anything like that, I'm not going to put myself at risk of losing a fight. And, you know, I should be able to count on the judges to get it right. But unfortunately, they didn't. And it needs to be done. Like, something needs to be done about it.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I did want to ask you about, I was watching on TV, and they came back from commercial, and the decision hadn't been read, and I could see you were already upset. And I'm thinking to myself, he heard somebody. He heard a producer. He heard something. He knows that this decision is not going to go his way or it's going to be a split or something. It just looked like you were agitated, and I thought, what a great fight he just fought. Why is he pissed off right now? And then the decision was read, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, he knew that this wasn't going to happen. Was I right there? What was going on in that moment before the decision was read?
Yeah, I didn't know. Actually, I looked. You know, I'm pretty aware of everything when I'm in the cage and I'm fighting. Now, once the fight's over, you know, I can calm myself down a little bit and I can look and see. And, you know, I guess you can say I'm pretty nosy of a fighter because I want to know things before it happens. So, you know, I was looking at Bruce Buffer's face and I was looking at Herb Dean and they were reading the cards. And their facial expressions just said it all to me. You know, because obviously everybody thought I won the fight, and I could see it in their face. I think Bruce Buffer was a little confused at what he was reading on the card. And, you know, I think that he double-checked with the judges, and they came back, and I looked over my coaches, and I think, I don't know if people could hear me, but I'm like, wow, they gave it to him. Like, they just gave him a split decision. And, you know, I'm looking around the cage, and I think I caught Kenny Florian's eye, and, you know, I think he saw the disappointment in my face, and then I think he knew that that I overheard them giving Daniil the split decision. So everybody was pretty upset about it. I was extremely upset about it, but I definitely saw it before it happened, you know. And then I kind of was like, okay, well, maybe I'm reading it wrong. And, you know, I went back and I was like, maybe they'll give it to me anyway. And then they said his name. And after that, he was more surprised than I was.
So. Yeah, that was.
You can see his face in every picture when he's getting his hand raised. He's like, what's the, like, how am I winning this?
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. You were angry as you walked past press row from all the reports from people that were there. Totally understandable. But I watched the press conference. You were very calm, very professional. What happened between the time you left press row and the time you got to the press conference? Who talked to you? Who calmed you down? What did they say? How did you go from angry to professional at the press conference?
It was just that little time that I had just to collect myself. Get back together. I got in the locker room, and, you know, me and my coaches, you know, we looked at each other and we talked, and we're like, yeah, like, we just can't believe it. We're all in shock and all in all. And, you know, at the same time, you do have to be professional. You can't go out there and look like a fool and bash the promotion or keep bashing the judges, especially in a sense like that. Everybody knew what happened, so it wasn't. I wasn't going to help the situation by going out there and still being pissed off and acting like an immature little kid. You know, it is what it is. I just got to get back to work and make sure that never happens again.
Yeah. I know sometimes in these situations, you know, Dana will go ahead and give a guy a win bonus if he thinks it's a bad decision, or, you know, Joe Silva might come up and say, hey, bro, don't worry, we're going to treat this like a win. We're not going to treat it like a loss. Did you get any of that treatment from either of those guys? Have you gotten any, you know, either a nice financial bump or a nice promise that, hey, you know, we're not gonna treat this like you took a loss?
I haven't heard anything yet from either one of them. I guess the week's still early. You know, maybe they still got some other business to tend to, but I think this needs to be priority number one. You know, that fight, something needs to happen, whether it gets overturned, whether it gets turned into a no contest. Those judges, I'm sorry, I don't want to, like, say people need to lose their jobs, but they need to be investigated or, you know, evaluated, or they need to be taught how to judge or something like that. They need to... you know, have more knowledge of the sport if they're going to continue to have a job with the UFC and, you know, be able to judge fights like that. So hopefully I get a call from them sometime soon and, you know, I go back to Florida and there's a check waiting on me or something, you know, but I think if it goes undone and I think it just gets swept under the rug, then that's completely wrong, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to try to take something into my own hands, whether I have to get it contested myself or see where I go from there.
Yeah, you know, I've always said I just think the judges, at least – because I know the commissions doesn't like them talking to the media and talking to the public, but I mean, in a situation like that, I would just like to hear why they, you know, why they scored it that way. I mean, if a guy can at least step to me and say, listen, John, here's what I saw. This is the reason I scored it the way I scored it, and make an educated decision or an educated argument. I may not agree with them, but at least I can kind of understand where they're coming from, whereas the way it's set up now, they just turn in the scorecard and we never hear from them again, and I don't think that's right, because then we don't know what they thought they were seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. And, you know, the first and second rounds are obviously mine. You know, I wondered if they even watched the second round, you know, and watched all the takedowns I defended. And, you know, I'll give them the third. You know, I'll take that. I'll give it to them because, you know, I didn't gas out. I didn't take my foot off the pedal or anything like that. I just assumed that he was going to come in a little bit more aggressive that third round and try to make some mistakes, and then I was going to really, you know, turn the heat up on him and catch him, but he never did that, so I thought he was just content with losing. So, you know, and that's my fault. You know, I kind of took a little focus off myself and, you know, not doing what I needed to do. But I would love to get their explanation on it.
Yeah.
And also, you know, something needs to go on about how the takedown in MMA is so heavily favored and rewarded when somebody gets the takedown, but it's kind of overlooked at the defense aspect and how hard it is to actually stop a takedown and continue to fight the way we did.
Yeah, second round, I think you defended 4 takedowns and outstruck them like 37-22 or something like that. It just, I don't know, man. It's shocking.
Dr. got control over him. I mean, he backed up the whole entire fight. He did not want to fight at all.
Yeah.
He knew he was He knew he couldn't keep up with my speed. He knew he couldn't take me down, and he was ready to leave, and I was still in there trying to fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems like a trend in my opponents, you know, they get in there with me and we start fighting, and they realize that it's impossible for them not to get hit. You know, they're going to get hit at some point if they come engage with me, and they just, like, I don't know if they, you know, just don't judge my speed well or what, but they don't engage with me at all. And, you know, people can obviously see that. You know, that's obvious.
Do you feel like you need to fight him again? And do you feel like you need a rematch, or is it a situation where you feel like you kind of displayed what you needed to display and the judges just got it wrong?
The judges just got it wrong. I don't need to rematch him at all. He knows he lost. You know, I took him completely out of his game. His game was supposed to come in there and out-wrestle me like he said he was going to do and take me down, but he didn't come close. I screwed his game plan up from start to finish. You know, I stayed in his face, and he got dominated that fight. And that's so weird for me to wrap my head around, the fact that I'm sitting here now with a split decision loss over a guy that I just beat. You know, my fight streak just got snapped. All my plans just got set back because of, you know, judges that don't have knowledge of the sport. You know, like I said, we should feel comfortable with knowing that these judges will get it right. And nothing went on with these judges' lives. You know, so my life just took a huge 180, and I just lost my 4-fight win streak. I just lost a little bit of momentum, and now I got to play a little bit of catch-up and hope the UFC makes the right decision.
Yeah, man. I think that's the thing people forget sometimes, is this is life-changing. I mean, it really impacts your entire career. It's not just, oh, well, you got a loss that you shouldn't have had. I mean, it really changes everything.
Yeah, it does. It changes all the hard work I've just been putting into. You know, I just set out for a year, and I came back, and I had my fight in February, and then now this. And I fought my ass off, and I got it taken from me by the judges that don't know the sport. Like something needs to happen. And I mean, I can't get the fight back. I don't know if they'll turn it into a win. And that's not a huge concern of mine. You know, a big concern of mine now is moving forward, hoping I get a big fight and can redeem myself and get right back on the same page.
What are you going to do? I mean, are you getting back in the gym right away? Do you have vacation planned? I don't think you walked away with any injuries or anything like that, right?
No injuries at all. I mean, I barely got touched. You know, my hands are a little sore. I'm in St. Louis for a few days, and I'm right back in Florida, and I'm going to start back training. Hopefully somebody pops up and they need somebody to fight, or I get a big fight, or they talk to me. But I'm right back training. You know, nothing stops progress, and that's what I need to do. So I'm injury-free, and I'm ready to fight as soon as possible.
That's awesome. So would you take, like, a short notice fight if an opening came up, or would you rather have, you know, a full opportunity to prepare?
I'd fight next week. So remember, I only got half of my money that I was supposed to get. So, you know, that's a little concern as well for me right now. And like I said, I'm still in shape. I can turn around and fight as early as, just like I said, next week if I needed to. But, you know, that's unrealistic, so it probably won't happen, but... I mean, there's a Houston card coming up I'd love to get on, well, you know, with Rashad. And, you know, there's Anthony Johnson fighting in early September. I'd love to get on that card as well. If there's a lightweight opener, it's just, you know, I just need to fight and get back in there and show people that I am, you know, a threat in this division, and I shouldn't be getting robbed like that.
Well said, man. I mean, I don't think you put any better. Does it make you feel any better at all? I know it doesn't help the bank account. I know you got bills coming up. Does it make you feel any better at all that literally everybody I've seen scored that fight for you? I mean, every website, every media source. Does it make you feel any better at all, or does that really not matter at the end of the day?
A little bit, but at the same time, no. I mean, I got the support of the fans, and everybody was on my side. But at the same time, the win was the important thing, and that didn't happen. So, you know, I love the support from the fans, but it really doesn't make me feel better. It's like it's like a double-headed sword. It's like, oh, it feels good. I got this support. But at the same time, I lost. So, you know, it makes it a little worse in that aspect. But, you know, I'll continue to take all the love and support from the fans. I really appreciate it. So it helps me. It helps keep me motivated.
No doubt. All right, man. Well, I'll let you get back to it. I appreciate you. Appreciate taking a few minutes out of your day, and you know, hopefully you get a fight booked, and hopefully you get back to Florida, and there's a check waiting on you, and Joe Silva gives you a call and says, as far as I'm concerned, you're on a 5-fight winning streak, and here's a top 10 opponent next.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
You got it, man. Hopefully next time we talk, it'll be better circumstances, brother.
Yeah, I will. Don't worry about that.
All right. Take it easy, Mike.
All right. Cheers.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Michael Domenech Johnson. You can tell he is, at least the time we talked, still not exactly happy about the way things went down in Nashville, Tennessee with Badil Dariush. Does deserve a lot of credit, I think, for getting his frustration behind him very quickly, being a professional at the press conference, you know, not berating Badil Dariush in any sort of way, just, you know, expressing his frustration with the judges. And I have to side with him on this one. You know, I saw a lot of websites, including our own, that scored a 30-27 for Michael Johnson. And instead, Badil Dariush gets the win. Again, I did have it 29-28 personally, but I thought it was very clear those first two rounds were Michael Johnson's. And I think that was a rough decision for him. And again, the type of things that it costs you, I think people forget sometimes. It's easy to kind of brush these things aside and move past it, but you got to realize how it affects these athletes. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And I don't know what the solution is. You know, I've thought about it. Obviously, you know, I live and breathe the sport 24/7, and certainly I've thought about it for a long time. You know, I've heard all the solutions. You know, more judges. I don't think more judges is it. Half point systems. Definitely don't think that's it. I mean, we got judges that aren't, you know, picking the right winners in the round. Now we're going to give them half points to deal with. I don't think that's it either. You know, I've heard, you know, maybe it's the crowd that's influencing things. Get these guys in a booth and in a monitor. You know, without any sound around. I don't think that's it either. I don't think it's a pride-style scoring system, you know. I think taking the entirety of the bout is just difficult for the human brain to do. I mean, we say all the time that the judges, you know, award rounds to guys for what they did at the end, you know, so-called stealing a round. I don't think the human brain can keep up with 15 or 25 minutes of a fight and really weigh everything out and balance it out and make an accurate assessment. I do think round-by-round scoring is the way to go, and I don't even hate the 10-9 system. So I think it's just education on the judge's part. I think we have to continually educate the guys. I think they should be doing, you know, more seminars or workshops or whatever it may be, you know, reviewing tape, going over it. And the other thing, too, is I just wish there was a way that we could talk to these guys. You know, the commissions don't want the judges talking to the media afterwards. And I get it, man. The judge is not going to say anything that's going to help them. I mean, there's really not. I mean, you can imagine the headlines that are going to come out, the stories that are going to come out. There's really nothing they can say that's going to help their cause. So I completely understand the reason why they don't speak to the media. But I wish there was some way. You know, maybe it's a set of written notes or something. I don't know what it is, but just some ways we know exactly what these guys are thinking. You know, if you scored that second round for Badil Dariush, what is it that you saw? Why? You know, Michael Johnson held the center of the cage, stuffed four takedowns, outstruck his opponent. I can make that case. I can make that logical argument. What logical argument can you make to me? Please tell me, what is it? And I don't mean that as an insult to any judges. I get how difficult it is. It's a tough, thankless job. But let us know that what you're thinking. I think that would help a lot. I think that would go a long way towards making things better. So, with that in the books, let's bring you another little interview I did earlier this week with Mr. Tyron Woodley. Obviously, he's got a lot of big things going on in his life right now. Of course, a big, big fight with Johnny Hendricks coming up that is huge in the welterweight division. A little bit surprised. Thought Johnny Hendricks was going to get the fight with Robbie Lawler. It's funny because, you know, if you make the argument on paper, I don't think that Carlos Condit is necessarily the right contender right now, the justified contender, so to speak. But, you know, I haven't seen too many people complaining about that fight either, because Carlos Condit versus Robbie Lawler seems like a lot of fun in a lot of ways. But, you know, that leaves Tyron Woodley and Johnny Hendricks with a big fight. And, of course, on top of all that, straight out of Compton coming out this week. I
Have not had a chance to go catch it yet, but I can assure you they will be getting my money. I was a big NWA fan back in the day. So there's, you know, it reminds me of my childhood a little bit, I guess. I getting in trouble, listening to gangster rap music when I was, you know, way too young to probably be listening to that. but it was awesome, man. It was, it was the type of music that really kind of caught so much attention and so much energy. And man, it was just an amazing group at the time. Straight Outta Compton was an incredible CD. So again, I'm probably going to be talking to my kid here pretty soon as he's sleeping in the other room. I should say, during the last break, he actually came up to me and asked me, "Daddy, what are you drinking there?" As I had my frosty beverage, and soda was the first word that came out of my mouth. So I just lied to him, I guess, and it came so naturally, I felt bad. But yeah, of course, enjoying a nice little cocktail here, and I'm sure I'm gonna have to be questioning him here in a couple of years as to why he's listening to this expletive laden tracks of music. So now I can understand what my mom and my teachers were going through when they were going through the NWA records in my household, and Ice Cube and Eazy-E and all that good stuff. So anyway, I will be checking out that movie for sure. You can count on that. And Tyron Woodley had a big part in that, and not a star by any stretch, but a speaking part. And you'll hear him tell the story about how it wasn't supposed to be a bigger part as it was, and it ended up going a little bit. And I had no idea how many film credits the guy has. The dude is putting in work, man. Ronda Rousey may be getting all the Hollywood headlines, but Tyron Woodley is putting in work as well. So anyway, a lot of good stuff going on for Tyron Woodley. I definitely wanted to catch up with him this week and talk to him about this fight. You know, is it a rivalry? He's got an interesting history. If you don't know, he'll talk about it a little bit in the wrestling world with Johnny Hendricks. So let's, as I go get another soda for myself, sit back and hopefully enjoy this chat with Tyron Woodley.
Hello? Yeah, my speak with Tyron, please.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. You're a busy man. You got a lot going on in your world
I'm
right
all
now.
Over the place. I've been over the place six times this week.
Six times this week?
Six times this week, yes.
That
I was in LA, thank you, man, I appreciate it. I was in LA twice for filming. I was in Norfolk, Virginia twice for ventilation in my first track meet. I was in St. Louis twice just to go back and see my 4 month old. I haven't seen her in a while. And then I had to drive back to Virginia. Drive back to Virginia with my wife. She drove 14 hours by herself, so I didn't want her to do the drive by herself. And I did that, and then, you know, the moving and shaking.
That's unbelievable, man.
Let's
start breaking it down. The first thing I got to talk to you about is Straight Outta Compton. I mean, I think everybody is pumped up. Everybody that I know, anyway, is pumped up to see this movie. And you know, regardless of whether you were in it or not, people are just hyped to see it. But to find out that Tyron Woodley's in there, man, how did you get hooked up with this film?
You know, just to make a extremely long story short, I was introduced to Eazy-E Edwards in 2005 by a guy named Lynn Odin. Lynn Odin was at the time, he was a film performer, and he was also a good friend of Eve's, and he did help with the wrestling. He was off of Lost Jam Stevens, and they brought me in to clean up his wrestling technique. Lynn was a film coordinator on this film. So I've been friends with those guys for approaching 10 years now. He was a film coordinator on the film, and when I came in originally, which was a stunt role only, I kind of made a mistake about my beard, because they wanted to cut my beard off to put another person's, and then have another person add a beard. So they're thinking, like, well, if you're going to cut his beard off, why don't you just leave my beard on and cut his off? So like, no, Ice Cube picked this gentleman off his wings. So I left it alone because, you know, I'm new to the industry and I don't want to, you know, pick up any dust. But the guy rushed in there right as they were about to cut his beard off. He said, wait. Cube said, leave it. He said, he's going to beard on the beard, he's going to do that. So that switched me from a pure sub role to basically a stunt acting role. I got double the time and all.
double the time on the set, double the exposure, and it was a great opportunity for me, you know. So that's how that played out. That's how I got on it, and that was my connection. And if people don't know about me in between fights, man, I might submit to 300 or 400 different films, TV shows, high budget, low budget. I'm always pushing myself out there, and that's why I've been able to, you know, basically, I've been in probably more films than any active fighter on the roster right now, including Ronda. So you just don't get that, you know, you don't get the buzz about it because I'm not getting the feature roles until I'm the champion.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was looking at your IMDb page, and it has you listed for some stunt work and some other things, but I didn't know you'd been in that many
things. Yeah, and I haven't updated that. So, like, I've been on Sons of Anarchy, I've been on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I was on Olympus Has Fallen, I've stunt doubled on Barry Sandman, so on a Pepsi EA Sport commercial, I just did the TV show The Player, did a movie called Going Under recently, shared out of content, I did a new kickboxer movie, the remake of that, so I stay busy, man, you know, and it's just not noted very often in the media.
That's awesome. You got to get that page updated because the only thing listed on there is Skinhead from 2014 Blunt Force. That's not much of a credit there, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad it didn't come out here because there was some suspect activity on the film, and I was like, oh, this won't come out. So,
that's interesting. What did you do with Kickboxer? I mean, I know a lot of people are looking forward to that one. What did you do with Kickboxer? Was it a more of a featured role?
I remember the bouncers and the guys, and it's like people watch a fight scene, and it gets to the point where it's a progression, and at the end of it, you know, it's like the last fight. I got one of those fights in a film with Joe St. Pierre, so we scrapped it up. And it's, I don't know the exact full and detailed dialogue, but when I saw, you know, they didn't cut any corners trying to get some MMA personalities in there. I was in there, George was in there, Gina Carano was in there, Batista. And I think towards the end of it, when they got some additional funding, they got a couple other people in.
That's awesome. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And then I saw recently you just finished filming another one called Mercenaries. Is that right, with Bruce Willis?
It's not called Mercenaries. It's called, the film was called Going Under.
Okay.
And the guy that posted that is a friend of mine who owns a company called Mercenaries, Clothing Line.
Got it.
And he just posted the post, yeah.
Very cool, though, man. So this
is called Going Under. It's an action comedy movie.
That's awesome. So, I mean, this is something you really, I'm imagining you enjoy it a little bit, huh?
Yeah, I enjoy it, man. I enjoy watching and studying more. You know, I got a chance to sit on set with Bruce Willis and, you know, a guy named Wood Goodman. I mean, not Wood Goodman. Wood Harris from The Wire, Paid in Full, and also John Goodman from Roseanne, the husband of Roseanne.
Oh, yeah.
Which I found out from St. Louis. And it's great to watch these guys at work because we watch it on television. When we're watching the movie, we just assume that this is going on in real life. We don't see that they turn those words or, you know, those paragraphs into life. And they brought character and emotion and, you know, body gestures. So it's just great to see the different ways that, you know, every take they do a little bit different. And, you know, I'm just learning.
That's awesome. You know, you mentioned Ronda. I mean, people always say, look, I don't know how long Ronda's going to fight because if she can make millions, you know, and not have to get punched in the face, why wouldn't she go to the Hollywood thing? So are we in danger of losing Tyron Woodley to Hollywood? I mean, if you don't have to be in the gym every day, you don't have to be getting punched in the face for a living, I don't think anybody could blame you.
Yeah, you know, once again, those are feature roles. When you start getting contracts based on what they say your network is at that point to the film, and you actually, you know, 100% could start getting those millions. I think we're in fear of losing Ronda just because Ronda is, you know, at the point where she's part of the division, and, you know, she can finish on the feet and leave her legacy, and she can venture immediately into film. I haven't finished yet, you know, I'm just getting started. So for me, as an athlete, I want to leave my legacy behind. I want to, you know, achieve greatness in the sport. And I'm not there yet. I'm getting closer to proving those points, but I haven't done it. And I'm not getting those feature roles where I'm making those millions yet. Yeah, I think I finished straight out of Compton film. I got some good feedback that I got some good camera time and, you know, a strong performance that I might get some calls, you know, down the road for some more films.
Very cool, man. Well, I wish you good luck there. But, of course, in the meantime, definitely enjoy watching you fight. Big one coming up, UFC 192, Johnny Hendricks. I know Johnny was surprised. I mean, we were talking to him in the weeks before that. He thought for sure he was getting a title shot. I know he was a little bit surprised that this fight came together. Were you surprised that this fight came together? I mean, I know it's one that you wanted, but did you kind of assume in the back of your head that, yeah, Johnny's probably getting a title shot next?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was just fun. I was just trying to run for the feathers. You know, I figured – if I get the fans behind me and made a good stance on why I feel like, you know, the fight with me made sense for the title picture, I thought that there was a chance, but when he kind of eased up on making it sound like it was a song, and I think that's what he messed up at. Because it was like, no, I'm fighting for the title shot, they had a band in the stands, showing the picture, you know, him in the crowd, and it basically seems like all of a sudden, fight, then he starts saying, you know what, I haven't heard yet, but I'm like, when you start doing that, you leave that little small window for error. And I think that's the way, you know, that they allow Carlos Condit to slide in there. They put it out there unofficially to see what the fans were going to think about it, see their reaction. And if you, man, Carlos Condit is such a huge draw. He fights in such, you know, gamey style fighting. He's a people's favorite, you know. You put him, I mean, we just a point of our career where we don't have the recognition that he has yet. Johnny does. Johnny has probably the same or more recognition, but me personally, if it was between Carlos and me fighting for title shot and they ask the fans, I'm assuming they might go with Carlos at this point.
Does that bug you, though? I mean, you're right. I mean, he's got a great reputation and well-deserved. I mean, he's a fantastic fighter. He's very entertaining. But as far as recent track record, it doesn't stack up to what you guys have done. I mean, does that bug you that he kind of got a chance to jump in line?
You know, at first, when I first watched him fight Thiago Alves, I knew he was going to get the title shot. I just said, you know what? He came out and he fought a very great performance, a very great guy. My opinion, you know, Thiago Alves, who's ascending down to 155 right here these days, he's been in the title picture before. He's been in the top world for a long time, suffered some injuries, some layoffs, and that put him in a 12th position as far as ranking. I just didn't believe that a person off losses to the 1-3, beat the number 12 guy in great fashion, should get a title shot. You know, especially when we both had victories over top 10. You know, I've had two back-to-back top 10 victories. Johnny's been in the title shot, had a top 5 victory, and I just thought that that along with common opponent, that it wouldn't even be an optional that he would get it. But, you know, he went backstage, and after the fight, his tune changed really quickly. He went from wanting to fight whoever the fans were on the same fight to, hey, I'm ready for the title, you know. I got a win over Rory, and, you know, I love to fight Robbie. And, you know, I'm like, oh, somebody got into his ear.
Yeah, I guess it's all in how you approach it. Well, I mean, it is a good fight, though, with you and Johnny. I think everybody is looking forward to it. I mean, even if maybe one of you guys should have had the title shot, I think the way it worked out is fun. You mentioned earlier this year the history that you and Johnny Hendricks have, the wrestling history I think a lot of people don't know. He fish-hooked you. He said that you bit him. And I guess that the point deduction that they got from you, they saying that you bit him, that was the difference in the match?
Well, I saw a single leg takedown. And Johnny put three fingers completely in my mouth, trying to lift my face up, trying to take him down. Then he went to the referee and was like, look, he didn't, they didn't even check the bite. They didn't ask me what my side of the story was. They just awarded him a penalty point to change the match. So I'm kind of over that. At the time, I was so pissed, not because it was something so petty. He's like, oh, whatever, you lost one match. Get over it. But if you know the Big 12 Conference, how competitive it is, you know, Oklahoma State has so many national titles, and then Nebraska, and then Oklahoma, and then Missouri. For someone that keeps up with wrestling, you know, those five schools will be in the top seven of the country of all teams, you know what I mean?
Right.
So win the title, that means a lot to me, and that was going to be my second Big 12 title, and I was just kind of pissed. But now I'm to the point where I'm over it, I can actually get it, kiss him out, all these additional emotions, and want to fight 7 feet. And I think that it happened at perfect time because now, you know, I'm a fan of his. But we actually talked for like an hour at the fight week. Sat down, his wife talked to my wife. And he knew what I was trying to do. You know, I thought it was something interesting, something funny. Yeah. The fans might want to see the fight because of it, and I think it worked out.
Definitely. So not really a grudge match then, but just really interesting.
I mean, we don't really need to talk about it. I mean, why do we need to talk up the grudge match? Because we're not getting pay-per-view, number one. We're not fighting for the world title, number two. Number three, the style of the fight itself presents enough fireworks where we should just train and not even have to do anything. We should just train and go fight.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Was that the only time you guys ever wrestled?
We wrestled then, and we wrestled one other time in a freestyle match. I think I started out winning. It's really good how freestyle, but some of the stuff is just like, the judge said, okay, you're not doing enough. I'm going to get this guy turned to try to freaking roll you over. Okay, you're not doing enough. You know what I mean? So at that time, the rules were really great. I feel like I lost about like a point or two. But I was leading most of the match, and it's just within a few seconds the tie case. So we only wrestled those two times. I was supposed to wrestle him in the pool meet, and he didn't wrestle, he just watched. So I'm like, he doesn't want to wrestle me. He want to protect his ranking in the country. I think he was first and I was fourth, or something like that. Similar to now, and he didn't want to wrestle me, so he watched his teammate wrestle me, and then he wrestled me in the Big 12. So.
That's interesting. Well, I think everybody's assuming this is a number one contender match, and you've done a good job of laying out how guys get to number one contender spots and who gets title shots. Has anybody from the UFC talked to you and given you that indication, or, you know, are you just assuming it is yourself, and do you feel like, you know, you can sell it to be a number one contender fight? What's your take on all this? I mean, is this a number one contender fight?
I think it is. But when they start talking, I said, just give me about agreement. Just set me up the fight, because I really don't want to hear it at this point, you know what I mean? Because I don't want to focus on the title shot. I'm not in it. I'm fighting in a three-round fight against Johnny Hendricks, and that's what it is to me, a three-round fight against Johnny Hendricks. Because when I fought Woodley, I was like, this is a title shot, man. I had a great training camp. I was openly prepared for everything that he brought to the table. And the week of the fight, hey, Matt Brown, Robbie going to fight, the winner's going to get a title shot. He was really snatched the rug from underneath me, and it really made that fight not the same to me. I really took away my focus, and I was focusing too much on the media, too much on the interview, too much on mentally thinking I was going to be worried and thinking about the title shot after that. So it didn't pay off. You know, I had that match was like a damn bad dream. I was just fucking sitting there, and in my mind I was punching, but in reality I wasn't. So I don't want another performance like that. This time I'm in a similar position. I want to really make it count, and that's the plan, man. So I'm not worried about the title shot, title talks. I'm worried about beating Johnny Hendricks in a three-round fight. That's it. That's all this fight is. Three-round fight against one of the best guys in the world, fighting one of the best guys in the world. You know, we're gonna settle it and knock you out.
That's well said, man. That's well said. I wanted to ask you about one other thing. I talked to Michael Johnson earlier today, actually. I think I was...
Oh, my God.
I saw how active you were on Twitter and just kind of going against it. Tell me how blown away you were by that, and what do we do to keep fights like that from happening again, from decisions like that from happening?
I joke him because I said he got swing and it looks like he can't fight. He's so fast, and you know, he got the behindness to him. I thought that he won every round. I thought the third round was a little closer because the guy got a lot of jabs off. It's just really discouraging as an athlete. It's not sports like, okay, I lost a wrestling match because the guy called a takedown. I was out of bounds. He said he was in bounds. I lost the match. Okay, I'll come back next week and I'll try to win the next tournament. This is a fifth-ranked lightweight fighter who's fighting against a 12th-ranked guy who basically did what it took to beat him. It was like it was a boring fight. You know, they were just showing in and out the whole time. So it wasn't like a wrestling fest. It wasn't like against the case fest. He was going after this guy. And I thought he had some great moments. Even if he lost a pair, I mean, who gave this kid two rounds? And like, that's what I don't understand. And then not only who, two or three judges had to say that this kid won two rounds, and I don't know what to have for that. Even he didn't know what happened there. So, I mean, you know, I'm biased. I mean, Johnson's from the Black Zillions, you know, project. You know, not like he's an ATP guy and I'm being biased, you know. he's from a different team, but I just, like, I hate to be in that position where you train so hard, you spend 20 to 40 grand on this training camp to put yourself in a position to be successful, and then you go out there and have a, if he would have won, I would have been like, man, that was a solid performance. He goes out there and put on a solid performance and loses. Like, you know, I don't know what you do. You know, it's funny, I was in the airport I was in L.A., I was going to Virginia, and I bumped into John McCarthy at the airport randomly. And we're talking about what the judges were saying. We're talking about criteria. And one thing he pointed out to me was that they're judging a lot on damage. So volume and technicalities and defense and counterpunching, you know, maybe it was a few knees, maybe a few jabs, knocked the head back more. But I remember Michael Johnson knocking him down. So I think that was the only knockdown of the fight, right?
That was, yep, first round.
So I mean, I don't know what they, I mean, I was looking at damage, I was looking at volume, I was looking at counter, I was looking at ring control, every category I could think about, the kid won. So I feel bad for him, you know, because he had a great performance against, was it Barbosa he fought?
Yeah, but Neil Dariush.
Barbosa is a stud.
Oh, Barbosa, he looked great there.
He looked great this past weekend. So, I mean, I do like his post. His post was really positive and, you know, really not crying over it and say, hey, you know, I'm going to let it happen again.
Yeah, we got to figure out something, though, man. I don't know what it is. I would just like to at least – I was telling Michael, I would at least like to hear the judges explain what they think they saw, because you went through every criteria, and I thought he checked every box there, man. I thought he had it all.
I agree. I think that was in the top five of absolute worst calls I've ever seen. You know, that was up there with Manny Pacquiao, Tim Bradley, the first time they
saw. Oh God, that was awful. We won't even get started there. All right, brother. Hey man, I appreciate the time, man. Thanks for letting me catch up with you. What do we see? UFC 192, October 3rd. What are we gonna see on that day, man?
Yeah, you're gonna see the chosen one take every compartment that you've seen. You've seen me submit, you've seen me wrestle, you've seen me counter, you've seen me defend, you've seen me knock out. I think, you know, it's about time I give you guys a full, complete, you know, buffet. And I think that's what you're going to see. But before then, you're going to see me on the Silver Spring August 14th, straight out of Compton, straight out of Ferguson, putting it together. And, you know, I'm excited about that film. Check that out. Check me out, UFC 192, October 3rd. I'll be taking on Big Rig, and we'll
settle
some unfinished business.
That is awesome, man. Well, I assure you that my money will be spent at the box office to go watch Straight Outta Compton. So I look forward to checking it out and talking to you about it afterwards.
All right, man. Thank you for the time.
Thanks, Ty. Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was the chosen one. Tyron Woodley talking about his big upcoming fight and, of course, his big role in Straight Outta Compton. So I'm looking forward to checking out that movie. They will definitely be getting my cash. I will not, however, be posting one of those pictures that you can do with Beats or whatever. What is it, a meme? Is it a meme? Meme? You know what I'm talking about. That Straight Outta that everybody's doing. Don't do that. It's played out. It was good. It was a good marketing thing, but it's played out. Listen, my voice is, if I don't know if you can tell or not, but my voice is hurting a little bit. I think I might be getting sick, and I'm babysitting, and so I got to go check on my son, so I don't want to keep you guys too long this week, especially without my man Cole Coffee, as I just sit here in my office in Las Vegas, kind of a boring locale for you. I apologize. It is definitely, in 20 episodes, the most boring location we've ever had, my office.
Hey guys, Cold Coffee here. Hey, figure I'd jump in here and take part a little bit in this episode as well. So, sorry John for cutting you off mid-sentence there, but we'll jump back with John and he can finish up with a couple little stories that he has for you guys. Tales from the road, if you will. A couple weeks back, I did an interview with Khabib Nurmagomedov in the MMA Junkie radio stations where he came to co-host for the day. And this just so happened to be the day before all that craziness popped off down at the World Series of Fighting, where him and the Diaz boys and, you know, the various crews kind of got into it. You know, I wish I had interviewed him the day after because I think we would have got some crazy stories after that. But, you know, all in all, it was still good getting together with him and as he was healing himself up and, you know, was preparing to look towards the future down the line, you know, when he was hoping to fight some people, you know, and he spoke to who he wanted to fight that the most and, you know, all this other good stuff. So it was good to catch up with him. So I thought I'd play that interview for you just so I could kind of, you know, be a part of this episode so John doesn't have to do it all by himself. I appreciate him putting all the time and the effort to do what he did and make it a little bit easier for me, you know, to just kind of sit back and edit when I don't take part. But it was nice. I figured, what the hell, let's jump in and, you know, pitch in on this one and help get this interview out that I've been kind of sitting on for a few weeks. So in this interview, we talk, and you'll kind of hear at one point, it kind of gets a little rough when I think we were getting a little lost in translation where he wasn't kind of understanding, you know, and you can only repeat a question so many times before finally you're just like, all right, you just got to let it go. So if you kind of get towards the end, you know, part of the interview where you're just like, you know, he's beating a dead horse asking, eventually I kind of drop it, but whatever. You know, it's one of those things that happen, and you know, it's funny as you're doing the interview and you start to doubt yourself when they don't understand what you're saying. You're like, well, maybe I'm saying the person's name wrong, or maybe I'm saying the wrong person. So definitely had one of those moments in there. So, you know, but luckily after the fact, I'm like, no, okay, I was right. But regardless, here's an interview that I did from MMA Junkie Radio Studios with Khabib Nurmagomedov.
All right, Khabib, it's good to see you again. How are you feeling? And kind of give me a little update of what you've been doing in the meantime. Of course, you're rehashing, you know, the leg and rehabilitating everything, but can I give us a little update of what you've been doing with yourself?
You know, now, this month, I do rehab my knee, take care of my knee, and September, I begin 100% training. And if UFC won't give me fight, I want he give me 3 months for preparing, because not like 2 months like before. Now for me very important 3 hard months training, because I come back after two surgery.
Was that I know when you went through the injury before and you thought you rehabbed and you came back maybe a little bit too early and it hurt a little bit, was that hard for you to work so hard and then have another injury again and then have to know that you had to sit back on the sideline again?
This is very hard, you know. This is very hard for me because all guys fight, all guys moving, make money, wins, everything I watch, and this is very hard. Maybe last time I become a little bit early, but I think before, oh, I'm okay, let's go, I come back. But now I understand. After this surgery, rush is very bad. Don't rush, take care of my knee, doing a very good rehab and come back strong.
Can you tell me a little bit about the mindset? You know, what's been going through your head? Have you been able to kind of focus on the strategy of the game? And have you kind of still been formulating and moving forward, but without so much doing the physical parts of things?
I think for when you're preparing your fight, your mind is number one. Not like wrestling is number one, no. In UFC, they have a lot of great wrestling guys, but wrestling guys lose too. But you need think, you need smart training. And when go to the cage, enjoy. And, you know, mind, if you think, if your head is working, this is different. You can push yourself different level. But if you know smart training, no thinking about your career, about your future, no, this is very bad for your future. But now I think before I training like crazy, training with big guys, training with anyone. But now I think now I'm a little bit changed. Training changed, everything changed. Sparring partners like before, but no more sparring with big guys, and very smart training now.
I think one of the first stories I heard about you and when I heard about AKA was that they didn't notice for the longest time that you were training without a mouth guard. It was just something that you did from back home. Has that changed, or is that still something that that you slip in and you do every once in a while?
You know, when I come first time training in AKA, I don't have headgear. I have 10 loss, 10 size, you know. Javier said, no. You're not sparring today. I said, why? He said, you need mouthpiece, you need headgear, you need 16 gloves, size, everything. You need shin guard. I said, hey, please, I training like this in Russia all my life. He said, you need respect your sparring partners, because if you work with 10 gloves, this is very bad for sparring partners. You need headgear. Maybe you give him a cut, you know. And he teach me to be unprofessional, because very important. This sport, this is not like 1 year sport. If you want to stay in this sport 10 years, you need work. You have to work 16 gloves, headgear, mouthpiece, everything, and take care of your body and take care of your opponent, your sparring partner's body. You know, thank you so much, Javier Mendez, teach me a lot and about this, about sparrings, everything, because he have very big experience, because he two-time world champion kickboxing, and you know, like this. Now I'm a little bit professional guy.
What would you say is the biggest difference between you and other competitors in the UFC? Is it the mindset? Is it the background of you coming up from where you did and what you had to bring yourself up? What separates you and really, besides the fighting, really makes you separate from the other guys in the UFC?
I think I have very good blood, because my father friends told me, when my father, young guy, he very disciplined guy, he training, pray, believe God, and no party, no drink, never. I think I have very good blood. And when I'm small guy, father beginning make me very good athlete, very good sportsman, give me, I don't know, I think if my father different, I'm different too. Now, you see, you know, father give me everything.
Thank you.
And I know God give me everything. God give me father, God give me mind, God give me spirit, everything, but father help.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like he set you on the path at the young age, which I think makes a difference, because you started so little in learning the right things. Is he always with you when you train and when you move forward?
Always. He always with me. Now I'm married, but I'm living with my father. But after married, I'm living a couple months alone with my wife, but I said, no. This is no good idea. For me, very important, father will stay with my father, because all my life I'm stay with my father, with my mother, you know, and now I'm alone. I said, no, and we move to father house. We're living and my mother, father, when with me is different. My mind feels very good.
No, it's good, and I think you could tell that a good positive influence and having a good strong family, let alone somebody that's seen you come up from the beginning, is great to have you with, great to be there with you. Now, when you get back in there and you're starting to go towards the fighting, you kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, you had a pecking order of guys you wanted to fight against. And when you get back in there, who's number one on your list, and why are they number one?
After champion in ranking number one, Pettis. I won't fight versus Pettis, but you know, it's not like I know like crazy fight want like with Pettis, but for me it's number one fight versus Pettis, because biggest fight in lighter division. I think UFC agree with this, Pettis agree, me agree, fans agree, and this is very big fight, and UFC, I think this fight UFC need put in very big show. We can make money. UFC can make money. I can make money. Pettis, everybody, and smell this guy. Smell this guy, and you know, come back strong and take my belt. You know.
I think that would be a very, very exciting fight, because Pettis, with his movement, and I think with your movement and your skills, that would be a wonderful fight. Now, looking on the current champion, something that you did fight and did get the win, what are your thoughts on Dos Anjos, and are you proud of what he's done? He's obviously grown. Are you happy for him? And is that something that you're hoping to get back in there and fight again soon?
No. Before title fight, one fight. before that, because I no fight 1.5 years. This is no UFC problem, this is no RDA problem, this is my problem. And for me, fight. I have to fight one fight and after fight for the title, you know. After surgery, fight 5-round fight, no smart, you know. I have my teammates, my father, coach here, Javier Mendez, my managers, Ali, and this guy say, you don't need fight, five-round fight. After surgery, after 2 in a row surgery, you need take 3-round fight. If you win, let's go title shot.
A lot of people would say Pettis is probably not the easiest of fights to take after a year and 1.5 years off, but that probably still excites you, though.
I think everybody who top 5, top 10 is tough opponents. Everybody. And I want fight versus Pettis because he's former champion. We have history, a little bit drama, and you know, this is very motivating for me. Wow, I fight versus Pettis. Let's go. I say I smash him. Now, let's do it.
And once you get through Pettis, do you think the fight for the belt would go the exact same way as the last time you fought Dos Anjos?
Before Dos Anjos fight versus Pettis, I thought I take him down, pressure, smash him. Dos Anjos do it. This is my job. But I still injured in Dos Anjos fight. You know, this is my game plan because I never go back. This is not my style. I don't know how fight if I go back. If somebody need beat me, he need forward, go forward with me. And if I go back, maybe I lose. But this is not my style. All the time go forward, hard punch, take him down, elbow, throw, suplex, everything. This is my style. And I think Pettis understand my style. For him is very bad, very bad. It's okay, he have good kick, and that's it.
Well, just finally to end on, I know you're good at predicting fights. If you had to predict, how soon do you see yourself raising the belt?
This is a very hard question. We don't know what happened tomorrow, but next 7-8 months, maybe next 7-8 months.
I believe. And I think a lot of people would say that would agree with you. And if you one last chance, maybe say something to your fans that have been waiting to see you.
I want to say thank you for all my fans. This guy, I understand. I still injured 1.5 years, no fight. I feel bad too. You know, I want to come back, fight soon. And thank you so much for support. And I want to say thank you for Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta, because when I still injured, this guy paid for my surgery, apartment, rehab, for everything. And I saw sometimes a lot of guys when move UFC, he talk shit about UFC, but this guy helped me a lot, you know. Thank you so much. But my friend, so his name is Sultan Aliyev, he fight January, and he lose, but he have injury like me, ACL. But and for me, interesting, wow, now this guy pay for him or no pay? I think, wow, I'm top fighter and UFC pay for me everything. No, this guy pay for him too. I know UFC take care about his fighters, and I want to say thank you. Thank you for Reebok. This guy, for me, is a very good deal. I don't know for other guys, but if you want to be make money, you need push yourself hard. 22-0 and make money, why not? Thank you so much, UFC Reebok.
I did want to share with you two quick little stories, though, from the road. I was in Brazil for UFC 190 not that long ago, of course. A week ago? Yeah, it's shocking how fast it goes. But, yeah, 2 weeks ago, I guess it was at this point. But I had to get my hair cut while I was down there. And had some errands to run and looked, asked my friend, Fernanda Praches, who, of course, you know from the MMA Roadshow, where I could get my hair cut. Also had to get some aftershave because I forgot to bring my aftershave. My mom forgot her makeup bag, so we had to do that. And we wanted to get some lunch as well. And I'm like, where can we go? She recommended this mall. And she did say to me, hey, by the way, the hair place is looks like it's pretty high-end, but, you know, at least you can get a haircut there. And all I really needed was a shave. I shave with a one around the whole head. If you haven't seen my hair before, well, that's what I do. I shave it with a one, and I do that because I have, if you've never noticed, I have extremely curly hair, and basically as it grows, it's a freaking afro, essentially. It's so curly, and it just bugs the shit out of me when it touches my ear, and it gets all thick, and yeah, so I just shave it. That's the easiest way to do it, and I didn't get a chance to do it in the United States before I left, so I go to this place. And first of all, they speak no English, and of course, I speak no Portuguese, so it was a little bit difficult getting things figured out. But it was by far the fanciest place I've ever seen to get haircut in the world. And all I needed was a shave. I just needed to shave. And I go in there, and it's one of those places that like offer you an espresso. They actually had like some cake. They were offering little slices of cake if you wanted that. And I sit down to get my hair cut. And this place is so fancy that not only is the guy, it's two guys cutting my hair. It's not one. So one guy sits me down in the chair, puts the little, apron around me or whatever you call the thing, a smock or whatever the hell that thing is called. So the hair doesn't fall on you, the little, I don't know, whatever it's called. And he puts that on me. And I'm like, okay, cool. Thanks, bro. Appreciate it, man. And then the other guy comes up. But no, the other guy, the other guy is the actual like barber. And he like comes in and he's asking me what I want, and I'm like, just shave, machine number one, you know, trying to pantomime everything because I don't speak any Portuguese and he doesn't speak any English, and trying to get that all figured out. He gets it figured out. But then it comes time to shave it, and like he doesn't even like grab the razor and put the guard on it. Like somebody else puts the guard on the razor, and the same guy that set me down, and hands him the razor, like presents it to him like his sword, like he's some kind of knight and just presenting his weapon to do battle with. And then this guy like kind of stands back and looks, and he's like shaving, and he's got, you know, the motion down, he's doing good. But as the hair is falling on my shoulder that's being shaved, the other guy, the first guy, is wiping it away. Like the barber would like pull back and like make it clear that now we need to clear that hair. And the other guy would walk up and brush the hair off and get that all off my shoulder. And I'm just like, what in the hell am I doing? I think I ended up paying like $50 to get my head shaved with a one. So I probably just need to carry a razor with me from now on. If you're ever on the road and you have a razor and you can do that, please save me $50. But it was worth it for the experience. It just to have one guy shaving your head and the other guy actually brushing the hair off your shoulders as it falls, you know, and all around me is like all these like rich ladies getting their nails done and their hair done and all the facials and whatever else, and my dumb ass is in there just getting a one cut for $50. So I realized I hadn't shared that situation. I noticed because today I'm due for another haircut, and I was like, man, how long has it been? I'd like to shave my head like every week if I can, but I don't have that kind of money. So if you're in the barber industry and you got the hookup, hey, hook a brother up, man. I'd like to keep this thing at a nice one every week. I had to share that because it was just so bizarre, man. It was the fanciest place I'd ever been in to get my hair cut. And I did want to share another story too, and hopefully you can take this with you, because as I was flying home, I flew through Miami. And I do have a membership to the Admirals Club, American Airlines. I just one little luxury I give myself, and was hanging out in the Admirals Club. And as I was leaving, a guy stops me. I'm walking towards the elevator. to go get on my next flight, and a guy's like, "Mr. Morgan, Mr. Morgan." I'm like, "Whoa, okay, what? Yeah, what happened?" And it's a guy that's a janitor, basically. And he stops me, and he's like, "Mr. Morgan, Mr. Morgan, listen, just want to tell you what a big fan I am of your work and of MMA Junkie and what you do. And, man, just really wanted to say thank you." I was like, "Wow, man, that's really cool." And then it was funny because, you know, obviously that's so cool for somebody to recognize you and to pull you out and to say thank you and they appreciate it. Man, it just means the world to me, dude. Like, I can't even explain to you how much that means. You know, I spend so much time away from my wife and my son. To hear somebody say they appreciate it means a lot to me, you know. And but then the guy proceeds to show, like, how hardcore he is. He's like, "Hey, let me ask you a question." I'm like, "Okay, shoot, what do you got?" "Why is Mamed Khalidov not in the UFC?" I'm like, "Dude, you are hardcore, man. You're asking about, you know, regional European MMA. And obviously Khalidov is definitely talented enough to be in the UFC or at least, you know, could have been at some point during his career. He just gets paid a lot of money to fight over in Poland, so that's where he stays. But that, I was like, wow, that's kind of a cool question. That really shows what you know. That's not the basic MMA question. But then, you know, we kept talking, and I was actually walking out, and finally I had to get on an elevator or an escalator to take a little shuttle to get to my next gate, and the guy had to head in another direction, and he said, "Listen, man, I just want you to know," he's like, I used to train, and I wanted to be in MMA, but I came from Cuba, and my family there has nothing, and I send money home to my grandmother to help support her because she has absolutely nothing, and I felt like me, you know, chasing these MMA dreams and paying money to a gym every month when I could be sending that money home to my grandmother who has nothing was wrong. And so I gave up the sport because I need to support my family." He said, "But that's my dream, to be in MMA. And I see you, and I know that you are living your dream. I know that this is a dream job for you. I can tell, you know, by your passion for the sport that you're doing exactly what you want to do. And rather than hate on anybody that's chasing their dreams," he said, "I always try to tell people that are living out their dream how much I am impressed by them and admire them and think that they should recognize that they are living their dream." And I got to say, it got me a little bit emotional, man. It was, as I was getting on the plane to fly home, I thought it was pretty amazing. And, man, you know, I just thought that was cool for somebody to go out of their way to take the time to talk to another human being and to praise them and to tell them why they admire them and to tell them, you know, how much they think they're doing a good job. I just think that's awesome. And, of course, it meant a lot to me, but just anybody in general, man, who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want that praise? Who wouldn't want that support and that show of legitimacy and faith and all those good things? And I don't know. I just felt inclined to share that with all you guys. And, you know, if you get a chance to do that in somebody else's life, I can tell you it meant the world to me. And if you can offer that type of respect and courtesy and admiration and just lift me up to people, man, do it. Do it. Make somebody's day, man. There's so much freaking negativity and stuff out there. If you can make somebody's day, man, do it. And to the gentleman who made my day, thank you very much. And as I told him in the airport, I hope things turn around. You know, whether or not he'll ever fight professional MMA or not, you know, it may be a long shot. But for a man that's working as a janitor and helping to take care of his grandmother in Cuba who has nothing and giving up his own dreams of MMA to do it, I just have to say all the respect in the world to you, my man. And hopefully things turn around and things will work in your favor, because people like that make that type of dedication and sacrifice to definitely deserve good things. So that's how we're going to end things. Hopefully you're cool with me sharing a little bit of that, and hopefully you enjoyed the interviews. And we've got a lot more to do this week. We're going to go talk to Frank Mir in the morning and have a little media day with him, be reunited with my man Cole Coffey, who cannot be here this week, but certainly will be on the airways next week. So, listen, again, said at the top of the show, but follow me at MMA Junkie John. Follow the Cold Coffee, or at Ken S. Hathaway if you want. You can have both personas. Of course, at the MMA Roadshow at Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all that good stuff. And
as I said, download the show. And, of course, iTunes, follow us, subscribe to us, rate us, review us, do all that good stuff. Help us to grow this thing 20 episodes deep. It's been a lot of fun and got a lot more to do, man. We're going to spend a few weeks at home, but we'll keep bringing good content. And, of course, it's going to be back on the road in the fall. A lot of fun destinations. Tokyo is on the map. Korea is on the map. Got to go back to Mexico. Brazil, of course, is always there. So we'll have a lot of fun shows the rest of the year. And more than anything, of course, thanks for listening.
Hello?
Yeah, my secret tyrant, please.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you, man?
Running in and out of the rain, grabbing my kids.
Is it still a good time for you, man?
No, like, it's the worst. Well, it's a good time. It's just the worst time to me to get in this damn rain.
So what I thought I would bring into this is a interview I did with Khabib Nurmagomedov. God damn it. I did an interview with Khabib Nurmagomedov when he was in Junkie. You motherfucker. I did an interview with Khabib Nurmagomedov a couple weeks back at MMA Junkie. I did an interview with Khabib Nurmagomedov a couple weeks... Sammy, seriously? I felt good about that when you're going to come in here and whine. I did an interview with Khabib Nurmagomedov while he was in Vegas. Jesus. How do you fucking do this? Make this sound so easy, Morgan. Fucker!
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.